Here to tell us more about inspiring stories and lessons to be learned from labor history and to help guide us in reviving labor militancy and revolts from below are Bill Resnick and Aaron Brenner. Aaron Brenner is a labor historian who is also an organizer for the United Food and Commercial Workers, and they discuss history from below and why it's so important and inspiring.
Aaron Brenner, welcome to KABU.
Hi, Bill. Good to be here.
Aaron Brenner works for the United Food and Commercial Workers, organizing and working on campaigns at various grocery chains, including New Susan's. He's on the board of Homeland Stores, an employee-owned 80-store unionized grocery chain in Oklahoma and Texas. He's also a labor historian. He teaches, he writes. His major written contribution is the book Rebel Rank and File, Labor Militancy and the Revolt from Below During the Long 1970s. So, Aaron, why did you come to study working class and labor history and then go to work for the unions, fighting for union power and doing organizing?
I'm a second-generation red diaper baby. I grew up on the left and always was around rank and file organizing on the part of the working class. I went to strikes when I was little. I walked picket lines. And so I always had an interest in labor, but it took me a little while to actually figure out where I might fit in. Eventually, though, after college, I decided I wanted to go back and study labor history, that it would be a good way to follow my interests and see for me what was the agent of change in history, what I thought was the most important and most powerful group of people that could change the world.
Yeah, history, as Marx pointed out, this history of all hitherto existing societies, the history of class struggle. In a word, oppressor and oppressed, standing in constant opposition to one another, carried on an uninterrupted, now hidden, non-open fight. You're now part of that as a player in that struggle. But it did. It shaped the world. We can't understand what's happened to America or our country or our lives without understanding the role of working people.
I think that's exactly right. My introduction to labor history came first in college and then in graduate school, where we learned that you really can't understand America's past or anybody's past without understanding the role that ordinary people, working people, played in that history. So whether you're talking about the American Revolution, the Civil War, the New Deal, the Progressive Era, whatever era you're talking about, labor and the role of working people of all stripes, all colors, gender, we're all involved in that. And you can't really understand why the Civil War happened. You can't understand how the Constitution took shape. You can't understand the New Deal if you don't understand the role that ordinary working people played and their organizations played in shaping those events.
Yeah, let's just do one example, maybe, or two. The Bill of Rights of our Constitution, one of the great glories of American life, that we promote ourselves as the beacon of democracy in the world. Well, there would have been no Bill of Rights if it weren't for the uprising during the Revolutionary War and after in creating the Constitution, without working people saying they would not vote for it without a Bill of Rights. Is that accurate?
Well, I think that what took place was, you're right, that as the Constitution was being drafted and as the Revolution was taking place, the working people in various places began to question exactly what their rights would be under this new form, and they were concerned that they would not have the say in what took place in the federal government without these rights, so they pushed for them.
Aaron Brenner, in the modern world, working class people have, in fact, lost many of those struggles. It's important to understand why and what could be done. That seems to me another part of labor history and working class history, is seeing the failures and the losses that people have undergone, and in fact, is thinking about different campaigns, better organizing. That seems to be part of your heritage, actually. A lot of losses, in fact.
Well, yes, the history of organized labor certainly is one of both defeat and victory. Organized labor has brought about a number of very important reforms in the United States, everything from the 8-hour day to paid vacation to the weekend. These are all the results of struggles on the parts of the labor movement. The labor movement has obviously risen and fallen over time for various reasons. But the lessons, I think, that we can draw are about the power of organization and the power of collective action. And it's where those workers are most well organized collectively that they've been able to exercise the most power.
This is KBOO Radio and Bill Resnick talking to Aaron Brenner, a UFCW, United Food and Commercial Workers. He's an official and also an organizer, and he's a writer. He edited the book, Labor Rank and File. We've been discussing the working class and labor history and what we have to learn from it and how important it is in shaping America. Aaron, the labor movement at some points made choices that, in fact, were really problematic and damaging for the country and particularly poor people. I mean, you might challenge that as well, but one of them seems to be, let's say, the decision and the way the movement operated after World War II in dealing with potential radical changes in medical care that never occurred. At least that's how I read it. How did you read that period?
Well, I think the United Auto Workers, for example, made a set of choices around how it was going to struggle for various kinds of benefits. And I think at this point, given the relationship with the Democratic Party, the level of mobilization, it was a tall order to win what we would call Medicare for All today or some kind of universal health system. And I think the UAW made the choice instead to fight for what became a privatized welfare system, to win employer-based health, employer-based pensions. The CIO unions made that kind of choice. I think if you're talking about more self-inflicted wounds and the kinds of ways in which labor has shot itself in the foot, I think the failures virtually every point in history until very recently for what were predominantly white male unions to organize black workers, Chinese workers, Latinx workers, and women workers into the same unions as those white male workers was an enormous burden and a huge failure that weakened the labor movement consistently.
Aaron Brenner, let's switch gears a little bit and go back to the initial question of why study labor history and working class history. It seems to me also what it offers is a much better understanding of our fellow human beings, of, quote, human nature, or how what really motivates people, than certainly economics, and in fact the other humanities that are often dominated by a very sort of individualistic view of human beings. It seems to me, though, when we study labor history and working class history, we can get a very different vision of how people struggle, of the really heroic movements. We have a whole different set of heroes, it seems to me. Not great entrepreneurs, but people like Joe Hill and Helen Keller and Victor Jara and Dorothy Day and millions of uncounted people who have struggled and, in fact, often won and built the country. How do you see that? It seems to me it's so important for us to understand the understandings of our fellow humans that comes out of a critical, radical labor history.
I think that's right. I think traditional labor history is focused on the elites in our society. They've focused on politicians, focused on corporations, business elites, as the movers and shakers, the people who have shaped history. And it's true, politicians have shaped history, without a doubt. But working class people, ordinary people, have also played a very important role in shaping what politicians and others can do. The struggles of working people have brought about all sorts of important changes. And if you think about the civil rights movement, for example, it was, yes, somebody like a Martin Luther King was incredibly important in shaping that. But it was also the work of ordinary black working people who refused to ride buses, who demonstrated, who marched. Those people shaped the civil rights movement and shaped the outcomes just as much as somebody like a Martin Luther King.
Yeah, in fact, shaped the country and forced the Kennedy brothers, who wanted to somehow sweep it under the rug and make a few reform changes. Suddenly, they had to support the black movement in the South because northern people were seeing the atrocities. And it seems to me that it was that all the very courageous people on the ground, you know, as one great pundit said, what was her name? Martin didn't make the movements. The movements made Martin.
Right. I think another thing about labor history that's so useful and so valuable is that there are moments in labor history where we start to see the possibilities for a new society, the possibilities for a different way of organizing our work, organizing our social lives, organizing our family and community lives. And those moments are very inspiring and very educational, and make us realize that, as you were talking about before, about human nature, we are social beings, we are collective beings, and when we're at our sort of height of our creativity, it's often in a collective manner. And so there are a number of examples. In fact, this year marks the 100th anniversary of the Seattle General Strike, and that was one of the first general strikes in the United States. It was a period of, after World War One of 1919, a massive upsurge of working class militancy at work and in the streets. And in Seattle, the port workers were on strike, trying to get more wages. The federal government had taken over the ports, but had refused to raise wages despite the fact that prices had increased during the war. And so they went on strike. And after a little while, the rest of the unions in the city voted to join in solidarity. And the entire labor movement in the city of Seattle went on strike. And the city simply shut down. The mayor didn't know what to do, mobilized the National Guard, but there was no violence. The workers stayed home. And then very quickly, through the unions, organized a series of structures to run the society themselves. So, for example, the Teamsters continued to deliver food and milk to people's homes and to stores. The union set up, the culinary union set up kitchens to feed 30,000 people all alone. And they did this through their own self-organization. And they started to run the city without the mayor, without the officials. And this lasted for only 4 days, unfortunately, because the threat of the National Guard scared some of the union leaders. The governor and the federal government refused to bargain over the wages of the shipyard workers, so the workers eventually drifted back to work. But there was 4 days there that demonstrated that working people could run the society for themselves.
This is KABU Radio, Portland, Oregon. Bill Resnick for The Old Mole, talking to Aaron Brenner. We've been discussing how important it is and how fulfilling it can be to read working class history and labor history, at least radical versions of it, because it gives you a different sense of what the world could be, and it also helps one understand what this country is all about, what its people are about, and what kind of struggles we're facing, and how to win them. Aaron, it seems to me we're in a period where there's an enormous insurgency. The last election was really a repudiation of both political parties. People are extremely angry and upset. But also in that insurgency is being reflected in some of the labor unions who have developed a very different sort of organizing program. And as weak as the labor movement is, they have really come to realize they have to have community support. They have to stand for the community. There's a number of unions that are really terrific examples of that who have won strikes recently. Tell us about that.
Well, I think the most obvious and inspiring example is that of the teachers. The teachers have been on a series of strikes amongst teachers, first in the so-called red states, West Virginia, Oklahoma, those teachers went on strike to get better wages, better school funding, and they've actually, in West Virginia, went on strike a second time. They clearly made their demands not simply about better wages, but about better funding for schools. And those red state teacher strikes inspired, I think, a series of other strikes, so-called blue state strikes, the most powerful of which was the strike by United Teachers of Los Angeles, January of this year, where they made what we call bargaining for the common good a central part of that strike, with a plan to win a series of demands, not just around teacher wages, but much more about school funding and about school services. They, like the Chicago teachers in 2012, had the motto that our working conditions are our students' learning conditions. And so they built community support. They supported parent organizations, other community organizations, and in turn, those organizations supported them in making demands on the school district that, for example, there would be a nurse in every school, that there would be more counselors in every school, that they would hire more teachers, that they would fight for restorative justice instead of the kind of punitive student discipline that was so racially biased and enforced so much more against African American and Latinx students. These kinds of demands made the strike incredibly popular. When they went on strike, there were demonstrations every day of 60,000 people, and there were only, I believe, 30 or 40,000 teachers. So clearly lots of people came out in support. So this is an example, I think, right now of how the labor movement is beginning to revive itself and beginning to see that in order to win, it has to represent working people as a whole, not simply the sectoral interests of one group of workers. And where they're able to make that set of alliances and make clear what they're fighting for, they can win.
Aaron Brenner, thanks so much for talking to us.